He started here. He is here. No one knows New York better. Geraldo, 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
Those who have seen your face draw back in fear. I am the mask you wear.
It's me.
Performances. Broadway booming. The Phantom now the longest running show. Pretty good. I love the tragic romance. No romance, just tragedy in terms of the recent spike of murders here in the big city and surrounding urban centers. A place like Trenton and Newark. I was in Trenton yesterday. I just looked up, curious, in the Trentonian, the excellent newspaper based in Trenton. And they have mark every death, remember every victim, follow every murder case, Homicide Watch Trenton. And every single picture. I mean, come look at it. Come around here. Just look at this. Every single victim. What is it? Say it in my mind.
Every single victim is young and African American.
I mean, this is the reality, the urban reality that civil rights activists refuse to deal with. Mayor de Blasio just claimed yesterday, and Noam reported it on his newscast, that all or mostly all the homicides, and we're talking about a homicide spike here in the big city, are gang-related. So the question is, if they are gang-related, as the mayor claims. I tell you what, before I get to my editorial point, do you have the mayor saying that?
I do. Here's a little bit of it.
What we have primarily here is a gang and crew problem. For those of us who were here in the bad old days, when we had 2,000 murders or more a year, a lot of everyday citizens were getting caught in those crossfires. It was a horrible time. This is equally troubling when individual gang members shoot other gang members, but it's a different reality.
Now, in part, because I'm a veteran of the streets of the city my whole life, basically, my whole adult life, certainly, I can recognize a gangbanger from a kid in hip-hop garb a half a block away. If I can, the veteran community-based cops certainly can. So if we have this rejection of stop and frisk as intrusive of ordinary civilians, we certainly can reinstitute stop and frisk for gangbangers. We know who they are. I mean, if you're a Blood or you're Crip and you're wearing blue or red, you can see them. You see them with the tats and the piercings and the very dramatic outfits. You can see them. So you're telling me that you can't stop, question, and frisk a known gangbanger? And plus, we have this superb intelligence units in the NYPD that actually monitor the social media of these folks. They're talking to each other. You know, this one, Jackie did this, he disrespected my girl, or this one was on my turf and dealing this and that. Why can't you stop and frisk them? Why are we shelving one of the most effective tools to combat this terrible violence? I just don't get it. No, I want this mayor to succeed. I want the city to succeed. But yesterday, you had in one of the papers, I think it was, I'm not sure it was the News or the Post, you had the story of the Bronx boy who would have been 7 years old yesterday on the very day that his killers confessed, pled guilty to manslaughter for trying to kill him. So it's 13 minutes after 10 o'clock. Good morning, New York. I'm really upset about this because I think it's a self-inflicted wound that we're suffering now. And you know the road to hell being paved by good intentions? I mean, yesterday the mayor responding to this troubling spike in murders and shootings in the city, 9 dead, as you know, we reported yesterday on Memorial Day weekend. Essentially, he's putting the blame on gangs and the so-called crews, which Curtis, who knows, says they're smaller, less formal than the old gangsters. Play some Curtis. Tell me what Curtis has to say about these perps.
Well, the Crips have sets, and the Bloods have sets, and they come from different areas, but believe it or not, they end up shooting one another, each of their own, more than they do their adversaries. And this is because they generally stand on corners getting into beefs with one another. They're drinking 40, smoking blunts. They're chasing skirts. They're arguing with one another. That's my girl, man. That's my turf. So they end up fighting one another more than they do their so-called adversaries.
And you know what he told me after that? He said that word has gotten to them that stop and frisk is off the streets. And they're roaming the streets more freely today because they know they're likely not going to be stopped by cops like they had been in the past.
I remember the old days in the South Bronx when the cops said it was a self-cleaning oven. Let them kill each other. The problem is, half of what happened in the bad old days was kids and other innocents being caught in the crossfire, like this kid who would have been 7 years old yesterday. He was 4 years old when the shooting started. He would have been seven, Lloyd Morgan. And if his mom's listening right now, give us a call, honey. I mean, you really have made some excellent points, you and the boy's father. Call us. I mean, that's the problem with what the mayor's saying yesterday. And it just shows a kind of naivete. And it seems to me that the naivete is he adopts it because it serves his political purpose. All right, murder spike. It's gangs and crews. It's not generalized lawlessness. Okay, so it's crews and gangs, but they're killing little boys in the crossfire. Rival gangster thugs fighting over drug turf or some perceived or imagined slight or insult, and they're killing four-year-olds. Now, the shooter who fired the fatal shot, he pled to manslaughter yesterday. He got 20. Hard time. And the other shooter, the one who missed, got 8. I think the sentences are probably appropriate under the circumstances, but that's the problem with what the mayor is saying about this recent spike in violence being limited mostly to gang violence, ladies and gentlemen. Gang violence doesn't stay within the gang culture. It bleeds out. It takes the lives of innocents like this little kid, Lloyd Morgan, who would have been 7 years old yesterday, but who's dead now. He's dead now. Dead. Would have been in what? Finishing second grade? He's dead. They say there are 300 of these violent teenage gangs. The Bloods and the Crips, of course. Those are the major organizations. And they should be... I don't understand why we don't go after them the way they went after traditional organized crime. With RICO statutes, conspiracy, criminal organization, you don't have to get them for the specific crime. You get them for the conspiring to deal drugs or to commit violence on these more established. But you have these kids now from 12 to 20 years old. Very crispy gangsters. That's one of them. Cash Bama bullies. That's another one. And they say these, you know, we've had gangs a long time. I mean, I was in the Corner Boys in my day. It wasn't like this. I mean, when we had a fight, I mean, if someone had a knife, he was like a psychopath. Nobody had guns. And if you had a rumble, you know, it was like an old Navy bar fight. You get a bloody nose, and that was a lot. Nobody really got hurt. This is different now. This is evil fraternities held together by Facebook and Twitter and Instagram. And the result is summer coming up, no stop and frisk. Come on. Come on, Mayor de Blasio, listen to me. Listen to me. It's going to be August in the city. You're not going to have stop and frisk. You're going to have the very crispy gangsters, the true money gang, the cash Bama bullies, the Bloods, the Crips. And it goes back to that picture that I just asked Noam to describe to you. You know who the victims are going to be? It's not going to be Wall Street bankers. Not going to be Upper East Side matrons. It's going to be black people killing black people. This is the civil rights issue of our time. Spanish people killing Spanish people. Who needs this? We allowed this cancer to get out of control again. We had it bottled up. Now here it comes again. It's unacceptable. We need to re-empower the police to do their job in a proactive way that stops the gunfire from happening. They have this new, sonic thing that spots where the gunfire comes from. That's great. But it means that the gun has already been fired and you're finding out where the gun was shot from. I want you to stop the gun from being fired by stop questioning and frisking a gangbanger that your grandmother could tell was a gangbanger.
Live and local, the Tri-State's most important issues with Geraldo, 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
Glad to see the Dow Jones clawing its way back. It's up 90-some, lost almost 200 yesterday. So come on back. We want the city to come back to where it was in the last year of the Bloomberg administration, first 6 months of the de Blasio administration, safe, solid, secure, proactive, confident cops, confident of the community backing. Former Police Commissioner Bernard Carrick, welcome to the program. If you had your old job back, what would you do?
Well, I think first and foremost, I get the cops back into getting out looking for guns. You know, they took away stop and frisk. They took away a bunch of the programs that were productive, that worked. This is the first time the crime is actually going up since Rudy Giuliani came into office in 1994. And, you know, all the programs that this mayor has talked about removing, I think is responsible. And I think at some point in time, he's going to have to realize it. Nobody wants to work or visit or go to school in a place they don't feel safe. And that was the problem with New York City back in the 70s, 80s, and 90s. When New York City's crime started to reduce, economic development came up, real estate values came up, tourism came up. And as we see crime rise in the city, you're going to see a reversal of all those things. So I think the communities, I think the business people in New York, they've got to go to the mayor and tell him, do his job. Don't take away the programs that worked and start going back to real policing.
What about the 1,000 extra cops? I mean, the commissioner always wants more cops. Do you think that this is warranted given the budget constraints in the city?
Well, listen, the budget constraints, you know, the one thing that Rudy Giuliani and Bloomberg, both, the one thing they realized is that your economic development and your real estate values are going to maintain the highest values with, you know, enhanced crime reduction. Don't mess around with public safety. I had 55,000 men and women in the NYPD. And I think, I don't know what the total number is now, but I think they're probably 5,000-7,000 shy of what I had. And that was 15 years ago to 14 years ago. If Bratton says he needs more cops, get him what he needs to do his job. Don't ask a guy to do a job and then not give him the resources he thinks he needs to do that job. And nobody's better qualified at this stuff than Bill Bratton.
I agree. What about these gangs? Former police commissioner Bernard Carrick, my guest, my friend, what about these gangs?
Well, the gangs have been emboldened by the fact that they know about the stop and frisk stuff. They know nobody's going to confront them, straight on like they had in the past. They're territorial. They're going out there. They're shooting up the town. And we're seeing it in all these cities where the mayors, where the leaders of those cities are taking a reactive response. You have to be proactive, preemptive in this fight against gangs. You have to be. And if you're not, they're going to be emboldened. They're going to go out there and do what they do, and you're going to be constantly responding. That's not what we should be doing. We should be out there proactively going after these guys, going after the gangs, taking guns off the streets, and that's going to reduce crime.
Well, Police Commissioner Bernard Carrick, my friend. Thanks, Bernie.
Thanks.
All right, it's, let's see. All right, 15 seconds from Gnome's newscast. You listen to 77 WABC. I appreciate your calls to 866-ERALDO. I will get to your calls, and we'll hear from the various borough presidents.
New York's biggest issues right now. This is Geraldo, 77 WABC.
Okay, welcome back at 39 minutes after 10 o'clock. We are proposing a limited reinstitution of the old institution known as stop and frisk. Now, I understand and I believe that Gnome has consistently, in the 3 or 4 years we've been on the air, had the position that the young minority community, youngsters in the minority community, should not bear the burden of the city's desire to keep itself safe from violence by allowing those young minority men to be, their lives to be intruded upon by stop and frisk. Is that a fair characterization?
It is. And throw in there that 99% of those stops are people that are doing nothing wrong.
99%, I think, is a gross exaggeration, but it is. I get the point that the vast majority of the old style stop and frisk, they came up with nothing. I don't know what the percentage is, but what I'm proposing is something different. What I'm proposing is gangbangers have a fatal flaw, seems to me, in terms of their swagger and their affiliation. They are obvious. I want the anti-gang units to be reinvigorated and empowered with old-style stop and frisk. I want them all stop, question, and frisk. I think that we've got to stop, if indeed the mayor is correct, and this is a gang phenomenon, what we're seeing, then why not direct this activity? I know that, let me take some calls. I've been talking long enough. Let me take some calls. Like, this is Lewis in Coney Island. Hey, Lewis.
Geraldo, I love you. You got to keep doing what you're doing with the stop and frisk. Back in the day, in the early 70s, back in the 71 to 77, 79, we did stop and frisks. We got guns off the street. You wouldn't believe the numbers of guns we got off the street. But the thing was this. After we did the stop and frisk, we left the individuals. We shook hands. We hugged. And we said, have a good night and be safe. When an officer believes an individual is committing a crime, has committed a crime, or is committing a crime, this is what you have to articulate. And back then, you had the Jolly Stompers, the Puma Boys, the Cats. These were the early gangs. And again, stop and frisk is the greatest tool a police officer has. Bad guys in the street don't care about the RMPs, the marked RMPs riding down the street, because they don't believe they're looking for collars. They're going from one service job to another. It's the anti-crime guys they fear. They're not undercover. Believe me, they're not undercover. We're just in nondescript vehicles, and we're out there to get guns off the street and suppress violent street crime that's committed in our presence. We were not allowed to go on the radio runs back then because we had to observe it. When you took that case into court, you testified what you observed. And the homicides today, a gangbanger is a gangbanger, but it's a homicide. A homicide is a homicide. You can't categorize them. It's a life. You know what I'm trying to say?
I'm with you, Lewis. I'm with you, absolutely. And thank you for your service to the city. I appreciate that. I hope. What are you doing there in Coney Island now?
Oh, I do a lot of swimming. I was involved in the Polar Bear Club.
All right.
Mostly I babysit, but keep going with this.
I will. Don't
you
worry,
man.
You're
doing a great job.
I'm in it for the long run. Thank you very much. All right, Dave. Here's Dave in New Jersey. What's up, Dave?
Hey, Geraldo. How are you? Over the last, say, 15, 20 years, from Giuliani to Bloomberg to de Blasio, the only thing that's changed is de Blasio. The cops, there's more cops on the street. De Blasio with his he wants to be friendly with the gangs today, and that's simply not going to work. I know you think stop and frisk produces 1% of the guns arrest, 1% of the people have something that they're carrying. But it's the threat of just being pulled over and frisked. It's kind of like the speed limit's 55. Everybody goes over 55, but you stand the chance of getting caught. So the thing is, it's de Blasio's fault. There's no and, if, or buts about it. It's Bill de Blasio's fault. He wants to be friends with the gangs and be peaceful, kind of like Obama with ISIS. He wants to be friends with them. It just doesn't work.
Okay, Dave, thanks. Thanks for the comparison. Very vivid. Here's Paul. My buddy Paul in Queens. What's up, Paul?
Hey, Geraldo, I've been studying this, and let me tell you, it's, number one, it's part of the mayor's fault. Number two, it's also the way you're doing gang work. I've always said it was gangs. Tell me, when you stop and frisk, the people who get arrested are usually 90% all gang members, but you're also taking the innocent people involved. What should be done is, over years and years of lawyers, ACLU, practicing their thing, when Billy Allen came in, he knocked out the gangs. He knocked out organized crime because that's what he did at the task force. Now you got going back where we have to appease the gangsters and you let the innocent people get involved with the police procedures. And I mean, like, de Blasio brings in Bratton. Bratton came from Boston from 80 to 90 to 2000. What is he doing here? It should be a New York police commissioner. It should have a person from New York, a police commissioner from New York, doing the job.
I think that Bill Bratton is New York enough. I disagree with that. This is his second time. He knows the city. I know him. He's a good-hearted man, a hard-working man, an honest, hard guy.
Police officer running the shop.
I think that I'm okay with Bill Bratton. Okay with Bill Bratton, and I just want him to get what he needs, and I need him to be empowered. He's not the enemy. We have Eric Adams, the borough president, calling in, and a lot of you calling in as well. Let me take a break right now. We'll be hearing from the Brooklyn Borough President himself, a decorated former cop.
The sound of the city, Geraldo, where New York comes to talk. 77 WABC.
8 minutes before 11 o'clock. Welcome back to 77 WABC. I like this man a lot. I think he's going places. He's already been places. But he's a very effective borough president in Brooklyn. He was many things in his career. He was a New York City police captain, a decorated, highly decorated. I remember that he graduated first in his class from the police academy. He's a guy who knows policing, and he knows how to be a chief executive for a borough, Brooklyn, which is far larger than the vast majority. What would it be? I think fourth or fifth largest city if it stood on its own in the United States. We welcome Eric Adams to the program. So, Mr. President, you have the mayor saying that the spike in violence is gang-related. Do you agree with that? And if so, how do you fight it?
No, so true, and I think that is our problem. And if folks would go back and look at some of your old shows, you would see how you were talking about a lot of this gang problem, a lot of this violence, that if we do not really zoom in on young people and have safe spaces for young people, then the byproduct of that, the lack of those safe spaces and alternatives, is gang violence. And when young people hang out in McDonald's as their recreational facilities, when they hang out with gang members, it is going to cause this reaction. And that's what I think we're seeing.
When you were in the state Senate and you did a good job there, you led the charge against stop and frisk. Do you regret that?
No, not at all. I think that what Commissioner Bratton is doing, who I believe is, one of the greatest police administrators we've ever had, he's saying, let's not waste our energy on of going after and just targeting everyone, let's zoom in on the bad guys in the community. If you free up police officers and allow them to use their discretion and their ability to observe, they can target those individuals who are the bad people in the community, and that is where the commissioner is going. And I think it's a great way of policing and not just alienating the entire community, because you need the community. The good people in the community, they will tell you who are doing or who is doing something illegal, and that's why you got to maintain that relationship.
I remember Eric Adams, my guest, the highly effective borough president in Brooklyn. We're big fans of President Adams. We think he's going places. But I remember, when you led the charge against Stop and Frisk, you also, prior to that, as a cop, headed the 100 blacks in law enforcement who care. Now, I know you could spot a gangbanger across the street or half a block away. Why not just stop, question, and frisk the known gangbangers? Why allow them to walk around with impunity, knowing that the precinct cops or even the anti-crime cops not gonna roust them?
And they shouldn't have that. And that's why when many people call for the end of broken windows policing, I stood against that. Broken window policing is effective. It's a great tool of identifying those who are impacting our quality of life, and I am a supporter of that. And, you know, too many of my colleagues criticize me for taking that position, but I know they have never policed a crime-ridden community, and so I know that if you take away the effective tools like stop and frisk, I am not a believer that you should ban stop and frisk like others have called for. No, you use these tools correctly, and you can target those individuals who are creating criminal behavior.
What about the heat that you get, President Adams, Brooklyn there? Are you siding with the gentrification of Brooklyn, the yuppie class? Are you turning your back on the hood?
No, and you're not doing that. I side with Brooklyn being a place where anyone can live. And I don't know if you remember years ago, a young African-American woman moved into Garrison Beach, and people, painted a house and told her, you know, to leave. You're not supposed to be here. I went out there to stay the night to show that anyone can live anywhere. I'm not going to move now in the 2015 and change my posture. People should be able to live wherever they desire. That's what America is about. We're not going back to the days of the Deep South where we had Mason-Dixon lines that people could not
cross. Oh, no. You and I are both stand for integration, old style. Everybody lives where they want to. Everybody, gets their level, social, economic class, free country. But we got to be vigilant against these gangbangers, right?
So true. So true.
All right, Eric. Thank you. I appreciate it. Thank you, Mr. President. All right, that was Eric Adams, the borough president of Brooklyn. We'll talk about what he had to say. I want to hear what you have to say at 866 Geraldo. We'll be back after the news.
He started here. He is here. No one knows New York better. Geraldo, 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
Oh, what a night. Late December back in 63. What a very special time for me. As I remember, what a night. Oh, what a night. You know, I didn't even know her name, but I was never gonna be the same. What a lady, what a night.
You're a Jersey boy. You must have seen Jersey Boys.
I did. What a fun show.
40 Broadway theaters sold a record $1.365 billion worth of tickets in the year that just ended Sunday, the way they figure it, the fiscal year. $1.365 billion to see live Broadway shows. And so playing all musicals this year.
This show. Police Commissioner Bernie Kerik nailed it when he said that in the last hour, if you weren't listening, that the reason those shows are doing so well, I was too closely, the reason those shows are doing so well is because people feel safe over the last 25 years to Midtown Manhattan to see a show. That wasn't the case in the 80s.
That's why to be vigilant against crime, and I'm getting to your calls momentarily, to be vigilant against violence is so necessary, not just to protect the people from killing each other or the innocent bystanders from being killed, but the aura of generalized crime, the disincentive it is to come to the heart of the city, to come to Broadway and to bring $1.3 billion into the 40 Broadway theaters. And all those people have dinner. They take an Uber or a yellow cab, or they, you know, they come to love New York. They come to love it. But they're not going to love it if they're afraid of it. We've been there. We can't go back there. Your call's 866-ERALDO. Here's Brian from Orange County. Hey, Brian. Thanks for calling.
Okay. Good morning. My son just left the New York City Police Department. He was assigned to probably one of the busiest prisons in Central Harlem.
Why'd he leave? Why'd he quit?
Okay, he was there 3 years. He was just a little background. He was a Marine veteran in Fallujah, highly trained. Four other police officers, he said the best young police officer in his precinct, just left. Four went to the fire department along with my son, and then one other went to Nassau County Police Department. All because two things. Stop and frisk is a disaster, they said, without stop and frisk. They took a lot of weapons, a lot of guns, a lot of knives off the street. Plus, they said they're not backed up by the higher officers, not the sergeant.
That's terrible.
He said the executive officers just don't back them up. At roll call, they just tell them don't get in trouble. He said the more active you are and the more activity you had, the more trouble you got into. He said so he was really disgusted. He thought he would end up being arrested himself. So he got disgusted, and he said the best guys he worked with all now have left, and he's now with FDNY.
That's too bad, man. First of all, thank your son for his service in Fallujah. I wonder if we ran into each other there.
He said he did meet one day. He was on a helicopter. He just stopped to get ammunition, and he just said a little quickly in like 10 seconds that he was gone.
God bless.
But he said he just got to shake your hand. That was it.
God bless, Brian. Thank you. Thank you for the call, and thank your son for his service.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Right.
That's a bummer, isn't it? Good cops leaving. War hero cops. That's no good. I don't like that. I don't like that. You know, isn't Pat Lynch up for re-election, the PBA president?
Yeah.
I'd love to have Pat call us and tell us. And I don't know who his rival is, but we'll give equal time to whoever is running against him. I'd like to see what the generalized feeling is among the cops. Now, for Brian Moore's funeral out in Massapequa, well, he's from Massapequa. The funeral was
Seaford.
Yeah. All the precinct turned out. All that Queens precinct turned out for him. I think it was the 105. I couldn't tell about morale. They were all there because obviously they were all saddened by the death of the cop who got shot in the face and the context of it. But I don't know what the vibe is out there. I don't know if the cops are disheartened the way they are in Baltimore, for example, where they're just laying off. I don't sense that generalized, but, you know, I really haven't probed it deeply.
You know, I was there. I was at the funeral, if you remember. And, you know, absolutely, that was part of the conversation was, you know, are we safe out on the streets? But a lot of that funeral, in honesty, is people being together and just swapping stories in general. I mean, here you are, of course, mourning in this awful story of this officer who was killed in the line of duty.
25 years old.
But at the same time, it's a chance to sort of, you know, unite with each other, even people you've never met before, and swap stories and talk about what it's like to be an officer. And so there's like almost almost a fun element to it. There's nothing fun about it, don't get me wrong, but it's good when these guys get together.
The camaraderie. It was the same in war. You know, you get back from a patrol, it's a horrible place to be, but you say, you know, there is a certain exhilaration in a job well done, a dangerous job, surviving the peril of that, doing something heroic. You know, I hope that that is some solace to the family of Brian Moore and all these hero cops. Like the Cleveland case. We had the Cleveland case, and the cop was acquitted. And, you know, it was a very bizarre case, and 140 shots fired, killing this unarmed African-American couple. And it got a lot of press, and they announced at the same time that the federal government was really monitoring in a close way via a consent decree. And I've seen these. I've charted them. Pittsburgh, other communities, L.A. had one. We had one for a little while here. So they have this consent decree in Cleveland. I heard the mayor this morning in Cleveland saying it's going to be a new era there. But you got to remember, Cleveland is the fifth most dangerous town in America. One of the reasons you have these dangerous encounters is this unprecedented violence within the inner city community. I mean, Cleveland is, it's amazing. I mean, all these deaths, the fifth most dangerous. So this is, and I love Cleveland. You know, Eric is from Cleveland. We're all celebrating LeBron James in the finals for the fifth year in a row, but he's back in the uniform of the Cleveland Cavaliers. We're cheering it on, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame there. I hate to, obviously New York is my first love, but I feel for this underdog, scrappy community fighting back. But part of the fight back is against its own community. It's killing each other. It's committing this suicide. You know, it's like the murder rate is 17 per 100,000. I mean, it's so every 100,000 people in Cleveland, at 17 getting killed. I mean, dude, what the hell? Stupid. Hey, Tim, what's up? Thanks for calling, man.
How you doing, Geraldo?
Good, good. Tell me about yourself and what's on your mind.
I'm a business owner in Harlem, but you know what? I'm black. I've got long dreadlocks. I have a scorpion tattoo on my arm. I wear Timberlands, jeans. I don't wear them hanging off my behind or anything like that, but I look like these so-called gang members that you said you can easily identify. But I have nothing to do with these gang members. I don't want to be a gang member, and I want my neighborhood to be safe. I really do. But do you have any idea how humiliating and degrading it is when a police officer comes up to you, throws you against your own car, tells you to shut up when you're trying to explain what it is you're doing, and goes through your pockets and pulls things out and does anything he wants to you for as long as he wants to do it?
Can I ask Tim, and it's a very dramatic story you portray there. Did this really happen to you, or are you suggesting that this is what generally happens?
This has happened to me three different times. I'm in the street 6 a.m. because I want to be in and out of buildings. I want to avoid traffic. I'm in the streets up to 10:30 at night because I can serve up to 10:30 at night. And I'm in all low income areas because I do primarily landlord tenant stuff. They throw me against my own car and push my head against the car. They tell me to shut up when I'm trying to explain.
All right, let me ask you this, because I think this is a very important discussion we're having now. What's your suggestion for stopping gang bangers from perpetrating awful violence, usually with guns?
You can't stop everybody in the street. Here's the
well, give me a suggestion. You're a street veteran. Give me a suggestion. Help us out here.
Here's what I think. It's only my humble opinion. I think when we were prosecuting the low-level crimes, that was the smartest thing we could do.
The broken windows.
The criminal element are the stupidest people in the streets, and they do the stupidest things. They take that. They finish eating, and they throw their wrappers in the street.
I hate that. I see that, too. Tim, do me a favor. Can you hold on? Because I want to continue this discussion. But I have to take a quick break. We're going to come back to Tim, a businessman in Harlem, who's the other side of the stop and frisk story. It's a story that we have to hear. And your calls, 866-HERALDO. We've got to nip this spike in violence before it becomes a generalized epidemic. We're not going to go back to the old days. We'll talk to Tim and the rest of you all after this.
From New York, for New York, live, local, on it, Geraldo, 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
How do you deal with the spike in violent crime in the big city? Or is New York going to go the way of Baltimore and Detroit and Cleveland and some of these other cities where, the spike in violence is really out of control now? I got the list of actually the cities by the most dangerous. Let me just read them. So you got Detroit, Oakland, Memphis, Tennessee, St. Louis, and Cleveland. That's the top five. Then Baltimore, Milwaukee, Birmingham, Alabama, Newark, and the Kansas City is just replaced. So Missouri's got the distinction, the dubious distinction of having two of the top 10 most dangerous cities in the country for violence. We don't want New York to go there. New York, the safest big city on earth. We're calling for the resumption of stop and frisk at least for known or obvious gangbangers. I was making the point that I could spot a gangbanger across the street. Then we got a call from a very articulate and a successful business person in Harlem, a young man, youngish man who owns his own business, who has dreads, wears, you know, stylish clothes of the hip-hop mode. He says he's been rousted by cops three times. His name is Tim, and we asked him to hang on because I think he's got a very important story to tell. Tim joins us from Harlem now. So, Tim, I'm making you police commissioner. How do you fix this?
You know, it's the beat cops, I think. Let me tell you, my office is on one of the blocks in Harlem, and I'm on the first floor in an apartment building. I have the commercial space. And you know what the problem is for us? We have to keep the windows closed. Marijuana comes through the window early in the morning, 9:30 in the morning. So, you know, you can spot these guys because they're sitting on the stoop at 9:30 in the morning with nothing to do. And if you're driving up and down the blocks, you see them standing.
I ride my bicycle Lenox Avenue at least twice a week. I see everything. I take different side streets just to see how the community is doing. And generally speaking, I think it's doing pretty well. I mean, it's certainly doing a lot better than it was when I was your age, Tim. But I worry that we're slipping back. Now, you got the guys on the stoop. What's the cop going to do, the beat cop going to do with those guys on the street? What would you suggest? Were you like I said, you're the commissioner, or I'll make you the precinct captain, or you're the sergeant. And with that watch, what do you do?
We need the beat cops talking to the anti-crime guys. The anti-crime guys are not going to see everything. And like the guy said earlier when he called, they're in unmarked cars, yeah, but you can see them a mile away. You know, just like you think you can see the drug dealers or the gangbangers, they can see the anti-crime guys a mile away. But you know who they're not afraid of? They're not afraid of the beat cops. Because the beat cop will stand right on the corner and four buildings in. That guy standing in front of the building is running in and out of the building to go get his package, maybe out of the mailbox, maybe from up under the garbage can, maybe up under the steps. That's where he's hiding his stash. And then he comes back out and he serves whatever customer wants to be served. And then that customer goes on about his business and the guy sits back down in front of the building on the stoop.
How does it affect your customers?
Who's doing what?
When your customers come to your store, what kind of store is it? And when they come there, just the regular folks, like the middle class folks, how are they affected by those kids on the stoop?
Okay, mine is not a walk-in business. I own a process serving company. We serve legal papers. So, I mean, if anything, I'm on the side of the police.
As a process server, you see a lot.
I need the streets to be safe as well. I want them to be safe. I want to be able to walk the streets. I want my wife to be able to walk the streets. I want my son to be able to walk the streets safe. But at the same time, I don't want anybody harassed. And I understand the police have to do their job. And you know what? I'm not anti-profiling either, because for the most part, you can look at a lot of people, and like you say, you can kind of see when they have
You could see. I hate to say that. But the reason that's profiling is because
a lot of mistakes with that mentality.
Well, I understand
it.
You explained it. But the problem is drawing that thin line between being proactive and being offensively intrusive. There's a thin line, and police training has a lot to do with it. And that's one of the beefs in Baltimore. No one's talking about how they cut back on training from 7 weeks to 4 weeks. Or something like that. I may have the numbers wrong here, and a digit here or there, but that's the big problem. Tim, thank you.
Geraldo, live, local. Today's most important New York stories, only on 77 WABC.
You're planning a long vacation, or just a day or two. You're finally on vacation. You're wondering what to do. You want someplace that's different. You want someplace that's special. You can have a great vacation in New York. And they say, I love New York. You can climb a mountain. I love New York. And there's such great sailing.
In the bad old days, they started this campaign, 1977. 1977 was an incredible year. That was the year of the Summer of Sam. That was the riots, especially the blackout, the riots in the South Bronx. I took Cheech with me. Ever tell you that?
No.
So I took Cheech with me. People are talking about Baltimore just now. So Cheech happened to be in town. He was staying with me. So the blackout happened, and they started rioting, particularly in the Bronx around the Grand Concourse. We went to all the shops up there, and there were people there. I had Cheech with, so Cheech is with me, and people recognized him. It was like, you know, Up in Smoke was so hot then. So we went up to some of the rioters were looting. One guy was carrying out with his buddy a refrigerator. I went up to him and said, "What the hell are you doing? This is so disrespectful. What if your parents could see you?" And Cheech is looking at me and saying, Geraldo, you know, maybe it's not the best idea to be confronting these people.
Confronting them,
hey, well, this is terrible. You, what are you doing? Put that down. What are you taking that out? And they're ripping the rolling steel doors. There's nothing. I mean, ripping the rolling steel doors off. It was horrifying how bad New York was. So they started the I Love New York. And what was it, Marty? Frank Langella was in Dracula at the time. What did he do? It was.
I love New York, especially at night.
Yeah,
so. But they were giving free tickets to Broadway plays.
Free,
if you stayed in New York, the package was you'd go to a hotel and you'd get a free Broadway ticket.
Wow. All right, so we don't want to go back there, do we? We don't want to go back there. Now Broadway ticket was $800 if you want to. You go on, what's that service?
StubHub. One of those,
my
yeah.
God, the prices on those things are unbelievable. We don't want to go back to the bad old days. More importantly, I mean, I want to bring this back to where I've been, and I know people may think I'm obsessed with this, but when you see who the victims of homicide are, who is killing whom, or maybe I get that backwards, but it is the inner city committing a kind of suicide. There is that's the difference, I think, between violence now and violence back in the day. Back in the day, it spread everywhere. Times Square was, you know, a sewer, Central Park, when, what's his name, Thomas, he was a wonderful parks commissioner. He also was the man, oh, I don't know, I feel, Hobie, right. He said that there were so many dead bodies in Central Park, he instructed the cops to take the dead bodies and throw them over the wall so that statistically they wouldn't be registered as being killed in Central Park. That's how bad it was. Everybody was packing in those days, including someone near and dear to you. But it is a kind of melancholy reality where you can't be frightened, particularly these in the afflicted neighborhoods. You can't be afraid to send your children to school. You can't be afraid that your kid's going to get shot in the crossfire. You've got to be vigilant. You can't let it go back to where it was. Okay, let me take some calls. It's too late here. Bronx, Bob's on the line. What's up, Bob?
Hey, Rob, how you doing? Yeah, so you know that the black men are often collectively referred to as the black man. And thinking of it that way, I submit that the black man should be on suicide watch because black men are killing each other in astounding numbers. And so I'm a healthcare professional, and when someone is a risk to themselves or others or are actively suicidal, first thing you do is you take away the weapons. And so the stop and frisk.
Amen, man. Amen.
It's a good idea.
So wise. And you know, you're
a wise guy.
You all right, good. All right, wise guy. But listen to what happened to me in Baltimore. I was sitting there. I happened to be with Don Lemon, the CNN anchor. And a guy came up to both of us. We were sitting at the table, and he said he was a doctor from Johns Hopkins, and he was with a female doctor, and they had a sense of urgency. And they said, "Geraldo, you have to hear this." And I said, "What?" He said, "The life expectancy of a black man in Baltimore is 20 years less than a white man in Baltimore."
Right.
That's what the doctor was telling me that. I mean, this is a public health crisis. This is an epidemic. That if
right.
it was some other kind of disease, if it wasn't this suicide that we're talking about here, 20-year difference in life expectancy, my God, isn't right. this the civil rights issue of our day? Okay.
Absolutely. And look, I worked in a maximum security prison for men, a federal prison for women, as a volunteer through the chaplain's office. So I am one of the guys who, you know, let's try and take care and help people. A Christian, you know, when I was sick and in prison, you visited me. That goes right up there with people feed the hungry and clothe the naked and you know, all of that stuff.
I got you.
I get it. The point is that you need to help people and prevent them from hurting themselves. And who we'd be protecting are the members of that community.
All right, I think I agree, but as Noam and our caller Tim from Harlem say, there's a balance. You've got to have prudence. There's got to be a way to do it where it is effective. I don't want cops to be the P word. I don't want that. I don't want cops to be so sensitive. They're not social workers. But there's got to be a way to target the obvious without, I know it's hard. Even as I say it, I know it's hard. I just know that it's better than the alternative. I mean, there's a reason we're not on that list of, that I read, that melancholy list of cities. Here's Jack in New York. What's up, Jack?
Yes, I'm a disabled retired police officer, but I'm also a former university teacher with a PhD. And so I try to look at police work. I try to interpret my very frontline experiences in terms of physiology, psychology, and a lot of the other disciplines. And one thing that concerns me very much is that a lot of the air personalities, not you, Geraldo, because a lot of them don't have your level of intelligence, and the politicians are misleading people because they don't understand what police work really is all about. It's very easy to make a logical argument about a false premise, and this is a lot of what we're getting now. So,
all right, now take that. I get the generalized opening statement. Now, specifically, what are you referring to, Jack?
Okay, so what I want to talk about is Freddie Gray and possibly Cleveland. Now, with Freddie Gray, I think a whole area of this is being missed because you can have a spinal injury, and you can check this out on the National Institute of Health's website, wherein the swelling doesn't take place for many hours and even days after the initial injury. And so, and also there's something on the Merck manual about muscle spasm delaying symptoms.
Oh, I agree. I agree that it could be. And I had another doctor from Johns Hopkins, Freddie Gray, for your to remind people, the 25-year-old who died in police custody, all six cops, three of them African-American, now all charged with crimes ranging preposterously from murder to all the way down to violation of various police procedures. What Jack is suggesting is that, you know, it's going to be very difficult to prove a homicide under those circumstances when you could have had a spasm, you could have had all kinds of things happening in terms of physiology. But make your broader point now, Jack.
Right, right. But no, what I'm saying with this is that he may have been damaged by the police, but it may have come even before the police contact. There's no excuse for not seatbelting him in, but what I'm saying is that you have all these theories going around about what happened.
All right, so what's your give me your main point. Your main point, Jack, is what?
My main point is that a lot of the air personalities and the politicians are coming to false conclusions and misleading the public. The answer to what's going on in police work, you know, and how to correct this, and there's a lot to be corrected, is in education, but not just, you know, the broad kind of meaningless term education. You have to teach people the difference between cause and effect and association so that they can really come to logical conclusions. I've got several examples of this, but I'm sure you don't have time.
Okay, we don't, Jack, and I appreciate your call and the fact that you not only have experience in the front lines, but also with your PhD. So you're a smart guy. When you think of some specific stuff, calls back. Here's Ivan in Pennsylvania. What's up, Ivan?
Hey, how you doing, Geraldo?
Thanks for calling. What's up?
Okay. First of all, I think this goes back to the mask campaign, all this misleading information about stop, question, and frisk. I go to the Bronx once in a while. I'm a retired cop over there. I'm still in law enforcement over here. And I can tell you right now, a lot of people speak to me. They're under the impression that stop and question and frisk will stop. Stop, question, and frisk is a law. It will never be stopped. And as long as the cop uses it reasonably, there's no problem. Now, the real problem here also is that this man came campaigning about getting rid of stop, question, and frisk when he knew that wasn't true. What he's got to do now is come out here repeatedly, like you're doing in your radio station, is telling people, hey, we didn't stop, question, and frisk. We just want the cops to do it correctly. Now, I agree with Eric Adam, who's a former partner of mine, and we worked in transit when Bratton was chief, that we got to target certain areas, certain individuals. But we also have to bring back this window effect. Because when Bratton was in transit, he started that in transit, hitting all the small violations. When he became commissioner, he did the same thing. And that's what brought helped bring crime down.
So you mean like taking a piss in the subway, they should charge someone for that?
Yeah. So the problem,
or breaking a window with a rock, they should charge somebody for that.
Right. So the thing is that now these bad guys out there who are not very well educated are on the impression that they can do whatever they want because they got rid of stop, question, and frisk. That's the wrong thing to be thinking about when you're committing crimes.
Ivan, I got to go. I'm way past time, but I appreciate the call. Smart.
Get Geraldo now. Get in on New York's most important stories. 866-GERALDO, 77 WABC.
We're staying on this campaign, ladies and gentlemen. I promise you, 77 WABC, this show in particular, we will not stand by as violent crime increases in this town. We will continue to urge civil rights leaders to recognize that the inner city is committing suicide with violence, almost a civil war kind of violence against itself. That cannot abide, not in this town, not in any town.